You're listening to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and RadioReverb.com online. Welcome to the UK's only radio show about HIV and living a healthy life. It's the HIV Hour. On today's show, we feature a rundown of the latest news and talking points about living with HIV from the Brighton area and the world at large. Also, information on Brighton's HIV organisations and some other events. Do email us at hivhour@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on Twitter at @HIV_hour and Instagram at @HIVHour. If you miss the show on a Thursday at 7 p.m, then you can listen again at 4 p.m. on Monday and at noon on Tuesday, or indeed catch up with an older show by going to the Listen Again page on RadioReverb.com.
Good evening.
Hello.
Hello, everybody.
How are you? How is everyone?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. How are you, Josh?
Not too bad. Yeah, all right. Yeah, things going on this, well, kicked off this week, hasn't it? So it's a bit weird.
Yes. The world. Yeah, but, the world at the moment.
But, mm-hmm. Yeah, but yeah, I'm just working. Going to move soon. I've got a place, so just gearing up towards that, which is great.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Sue?
Yes. Yeah, working and getting ready. Next week, I'm going to the Christie's Auction House in London. Yes.
Ooh. London. Ooh.
I've been invited as a guest.
What are you auctioning?
Myself. No. No, it's every year the Terence Higgins Trust do a big auction, and I believe that Boy George has put something in that. I was going to say put something in the hat, but he's put something in to be auctioned to obviously raise vital funds for the Terence Higgins Trust. And I've been invited as a guest. So, yes, I'm looking forward to my trip on Monday there. And, yeah, just lots of other things happening and being very busy.
Yeah, sounds good. Mm-hmm. And yourself, Stephen?
Yeah, I've kind of been busy with Positive Voices talks over the last couple of weeks, kind of hop into different cities and
so
that's been good. It's been good to see that the interest in hearing our stories is still gone on beyond World AIDS Day, because it was very busy, wasn't it, Sue, mm-hmm. around World AIDS Day?
It was, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's carried on, hasn't it? You know, there mm-hmm. still seems to be a lot of companies and organizations mm. that still want us to talk, so yeah, so that's been me.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Great.
And no Tony or West Tanya?
Yeah, I think she's under the table somewhere, but she may pop out at any second and say hello. I know she's there studying at the moment, so but she may sort of jump in to say hi to everybody, just to make sure that she's still here. She's still
yes.
here.
Mm-hmm. And Tony's not with us either, so it's
not today. Yeah. No. Mm-hmm.
What's on the show today?
Well, Steve, you've done a great interview, haven't you?
I've done a great interview, yeah, with a wonderful activist called Mina, who is a heterosexual woman living with HIV, and she's a heterosexual South Asian woman. So again, that brings right. up a whole another lot of things. So she's going to be on later telling her story.
Brilliant.
Fabulous.
Great.
Yeah, it's great to get those different from people from different
diverse
places as well,
communities,
the world.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm. And
I'm going to be talking about, I'm going to say a young lady, she's only 23, Mercy Shimbemba. She was actually born with HIV. I'm just going to be talking about Mercy lives in Cardiff, and a new initiative has been set up to do with HIV advocacy. So I'm going to be talking about that and talking about her and perhaps and also some of the amazing work. Yeah, she's a powerhouse at such a young age. So, yes.
Yeah. Fantastic. And then we've got world stories and community news at the end of the show. So
we have.
Good show to come up. Should we get on with it?
Yes,
let's
why not?
Let's get on with it.
Yes, good. Let's go.
HIV Hour is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the HIV Hour. Today I have a guest, and that guest is Mina. Mina, welcome to the HIV Hour.
Hi Stephen, thank you for inviting me.
You're very welcome, you're very welcome. So Mina, Mina and I met each other about a year ago, and we've done a YouTube video, and we've talked a lot about issues, the issues in my life, the issues in her life, and I just felt, Mina, that you'd be an interesting guest to have on, because you have a different, you know, you have a different background from me, and I just thought it would be really interesting for the viewers to hear your story. So please tell us about your HIV story.
Well, you know, thank you for inviting me. And yeah, my name is Mina, and I was diagnosed, I'm a South Asian woman, and I was diagnosed in 2003. And it was really interesting because I'm a heterosexual woman, you know, and I was diagnosed in my 30s. And I was actually diagnosed by default because, and I was very late diagnosed as well, actually, Stephen, because at the time, they found I had unusual white blood cells, but they couldn't understand what was going on. And so I had to get some stem cell research done. So I had to go through a gum clinic, and that's how I found out. And at the time, I had that kind of really kind of classic symptoms of nearly acquiring AIDS, actually, which I wasn't even aware of at the time. So I had oral thrush, I had lesions, I'd lost a lot of weight. I was, I went down to 6 stone, at the end of it, you know, I was diagnosed in the hospital, and, you know, it was a shock to the system, and I was totally like, you know, it can't happen to me, I'm a heterosexual South Asian woman, how, you know, it was a shock, it was frightening, and it was a sense of disbelief and fear as well at the time, and overwhelmment, and then I was hospitalised as well for 3 months because I then developed PCP, which is the pneumonia that's related to HIV.
Yeah.
That's kind of where my journey kind of started, because it, you know, and it was a emotional and a physical toll that it took on me at the time. At the time, my family, I told my siblings, but not my parents, because from the South Asian community, you know, they probably wouldn't understand, and we didn't want to really tell them at that point. And we didn't at that point. And, you know, that's the kind of family agreement we came to, which I think was the best decision at the time. So that was kind of my journey into HIV, and it had a psychological and a physical impact on me. You know, and then, like, as you know, when you first get diagnosed, you know, you always think, oh my God, it's a death sentence, you know, and then they'll tell you, no, it's not, you're going to be okay. But it's always the internalized stigma that you experience, which is about that negative perspective you have of yourself and that fear of, you know, being rejected, the secrecy, you know, just the fear of telling somebody and being rejected, or, you know, and it took me a while just to kind of, you know, the psychological impact was quite, you know, took a toll on me, really.
So you said, Mina, about your first thoughts being, I'm a heterosexual woman, you know, how can this be happening? Would you say that education was good enough for, you know, did you feel that the education that you had on AIDS was enough, you know, because obviously...
Not really. I mean, I think you all heard of, you know, HIV and AIDS from the, you know, from the 80s, you know, of a death sentence. But actually, you know, nobody's really giving that. There wasn't that information, or I don't think that information is out there enough about actually you can live very well with it, you know, with the U equals U campaign, which means if you're untransmittable, you know, undetectable, you're untransmittable, means that if your HIV, you know, viral load is, you know, undetectable, if you're taking the treatment, you can't pass it on.
Yeah.
And so I think that just the messages weren't there even then, you know, and I think that the issue that came up for me was really the fact that you don't know that, and, you know, it's only until it comes to your doorstep and you're like, oh, okay, it's affecting me now, because I don't think people really think about sexual health and STIs as much until it happens to you, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I just don't think it's not something that, you know, is in forefront of most people. you know, unless they're sexually active with various partners, perhaps. But I wasn't. I was in a, you know, in a relationship at the time. So you would really have that conversation, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you talked about secrecy, you know, Mina, in mm-hmm. it, as far as your parents have, you know, were concerned. And do you think that, do you feel that the secrecy side is just because they wouldn't understand? You know, is it because HIV is not something that's spoken about in the HIV in the South Asian community? What were your thoughts?
I don't think HIV is spoken about in any community, to be honest with you. And because it's an STI, sexual health, I think there is a taboo and stigma around it anyway, around STIs anyway. Mm-hmm. And I think from my perspective, it was we wanted to protect our parents, you know, from a cultural perspective. And I think that's still, and that's not to perpetuate stigma. I think it's like anything, isn't it? It's like, you know, because I've been a peer mentor, and one of the things women who I've worked with and supported said to me, well, there are certain people I'll tell and certain people I won't, because they're just not going to change their mind about it, or they'll have an opinion, or, you know. And so I think that, you know, you're always going to get a varied experience, and I think it's about you, how you wish to tell and where you want to tell. And whilst we want to change everyone's attitudes, it's like we've got to also, I think, honour ourselves and protect ourselves as well, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And I think that's equally okay. You know, you don't have to shout out to everybody, and it takes, you know, you've got to be really brave and comfortable to talk about it. I mean, for me, it's taken me, you know, only the last few years I've become a HIV activist myself, mm-hmm. you know, for me to talk about it openly. And, you know, people find that uncomfortable within, you know, in my, you know, in particular sectors, and, you know, quite courageous and brave to share your vulnerability and particularly about STIs, and, you know, and because if you have cancer or some other health condition, you can, there's no kind of that, there's not really that kind of stigma that HIV actually continues to have, which it shouldn't do, because I think it's to do with the lack of information about, because I think we're still telling the old story, or people perceive the old story of HIV about, you know, it happens with specific groups, you know, that you're probably, you know, there's misconceptions out there.
Yeah.
And taboos around sexual, and I think sexual health is the last taboo anyway, you know, in humanity that we need to tackle. So I do feel that, you know, attitudes do need to change, and we have to talk more openly about it, you know, to explain that actually, you know, the perception of people with HIV, you know, I work in the HIV sector for quite a while now, and I've realised that HIV affects every single type of person, doesn't matter what race or creed or gender or background they're from. It's universal, actually, you know.
Yeah.
And it doesn't discriminate, actually. And it's opened my eyes to that. But also what it has opened my eyes is generalised stigma and the internalised stigma that is continue to perpetuate within society. And I think that needs to change. And the only way we can change it is by telling a positive story around HIV, you know, that, you know, we can live normal lives, like myself and you. You know, I just take one tablet a day and it's fine. Yeah. You know, it's not that invasive. I can get on with my daily life. When I was first diagnosed, it was all encompassing the identity. I held the identity, and it was like with shame and secrecy. And, you know, I thought I wasn't worthy, feel being rejected. I thought I wasn't deserving. You know, I didn't really value myself because of the stigma of having such a diagnosis. And then I had to move through that, you know, and I had a bit of counselling and support and emotional support for that, you know, to understand that actually my HIV is only one part of me. It's not all of me. And that's a journey for every single person who lives with HIV, that they have to kind of move through that, and, you know, that having that sense of level of acceptance at some point, because you do go through a grieving process, because you do lose yourself, because you suddenly become this all-consuming HIV identity, and then you have to kind of move through that, you know, and then suddenly realize, okay, it's only one small part of me now, it's not all of me.
Yeah.
And I think I've mentioned this to you before, that actually, it was like, for me, it was like falling in love with myself again, because I'd fallen out of my loving myself because of the negative, how the negativity of, you know, perceptions I had about living with HIV, which was totally untrue. because I was somebody before HIV and I'm somebody after HIV, you know, and that you have to move through the identity of that you are more than just your HIV. And that's really important to know. And loving yourself and, you know, totally, you know, irrespective of what's going on for you. And I think that's what, and I think that's what I took away from and continue to get what I've learned from my HIV is that, for me anyway, it's a love affair with myself, you know, that, you know, we fall in and out of ourselves because we criticize ourselves or we don't value ourselves. And I realized that through my journey of dating men, some had run a mile, some totally accepted me. You know, like I said to you, I've had a couple of marriage proposals and I'm just fussy. So, you know, and I've noticed when I was doing my peer mentoring, you know, women would come to me in tears and I was supporting them. Will I ever get married? You know, will I have children? Will anybody accept me? You know, the fear of rejection. And actually, you know, one of the women I did support, you know, many years later, she rang me and said, look, I'm married, and she had children.
Yeah.
So anything is possible.
It's all possible. Yeah, yeah. So to end with, Mina, the last question is, you have been very vocal. Why has it been important for you to tell your story?
Because I think it's important to remind people that we're all human, we're all different, and we're all unique. And, you know, our diagnosis or ability or disability, whatever you want to call it, you know, doesn't define us. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's only one part of all of us. And I want to enable people to let people know that, you know, you can be, do, or have anything you want, no matter what, you know, with your HIV. It doesn't have to define you. It can actually help you grow. It can help you evolve and actually teaches you your own self-love about you. That's what it taught me, that you've got to love you anyway, you know. And, you know, the HIV is just one part of you. It's not all of you. And it doesn't stop you from doing what you need to do or where you want to get to in life or what your dreams or aspirations are. You know, if anything, it builds your resilience to say, actually, this is one aspect of my life. But actually, if you're blessed with, you know, treatment and support, you know, then you can make a difference, you know. And, you know, for me, the difference has been, you know, peer mentoring and supporting, you know, other women that I've supported, you know, who are struggling with their diagnosis and help them move through that diagnosis to find themselves again. You know, because you do get lost in the process, you know, when you have a diagnosis such as that. And it's about really saying that actually with treatment and support, you know, you can move through that. And it's about self-love and empowerment. That's kind of the message I want to give, that just be you anyway and celebrate you and love you for who you are.
Well, Mina, I think people should watch out for you, because I know that you're going to go out there and do amazing things in the HIV community. So, so thank you for being on the HIV Hour. It's been great to talk to you.
Oh, thank you, Steve. It's been a real pleasure and to talk to you again. And thank you. Take care. Just a bit of a break from the norm.
Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM. So. Let's talk about Mercy. Mercy Shimbambwa, she's 23. She was born with HIV. She lives in Cardiff. And she is, well, I've met her on a few occasions. I've done some campaigning work with her. And she, like I said, she was born with HIV. So she's been living with HIV for 23 years. And she has never let that stop her doing anything and making a difference. And as I say, she lives in Cardiff, and she talked about part of the difficulty was being able to access specialised support and services for her voice to be heard. And a new HIV advocacy network, Wales HIV Advocacy Matters, WHAM, now aims to change that by increasing community understanding and improving access to testing and treatment. Now, the project is set to run for the next 2 years and has been set up by volunteers, including some sexual health and HIV specialists in Cardiff and Vale Health Board area. It's hoped that it would benefit people across Wales. Now, medical progress has been made has made HIV a manageable and undetectable virus, and Mercy 23, like I said, is able to live a healthy, really happy, happy and healthy life. Now, she's, and I know Mercy, I've met, like I said, I've met her in some of the campaigns some years ago. I done a campaign, we've done a campaign together, which was women, and it was called Invisible No Longer. And it focused on women living in the community with HIV, and I was so honoured to meet her. And she's a beautiful young girl, and she is such a power. And what brings me to mind is obviously we've got International Women's Day coming up soon, and she just shouts it for me. But, you know, she's putting herself out there. She's been, you know, delivering messages in the Houses of Parliament. She's worked with other famous people. Gareth Thomas, she's worked with, who we know is living with HIV as well, the well-known rugby player, obviously in Wales. Now, Wales hasn't had specialised support services. Now, I never knew this. It's never had support services for people living with HIV. And if you look across the border in England, they have lots of different services for people that can access. And part of what was difficult growing up here, she says, was there wasn't that the tailored support until Children's HIV Association was able to do some work in Wales. And she goes on to say, I think having an advocacy network, which could bring some really influential people together across Wales so that there is a coercive strategy going forward. And she says, data on the number of people diagnosed with HIV in Wales has not been published since 2019. Wow. So at the time, there's been a slight increase in positive cases amongst women and young people. The number of men testing positive had reduced, but it's believed men who have sex with men or other men are still believed to be most at risk. And if we look at, again, we mentioned some of the stats, again, in the heterosexual community, it's on the increase. So apparently Cardiff and Vale Health Board is a member of the Fast Track Cities programme, which Brighton is also, and London, which is a global initiative to reduce stigma and improve health outcomes for people living with HIV. So, yeah, she's just still doing stuff at the age of 23. I mean, I can't imagine what it must have been like for her or anyone born with HIV it's just amazing that she decided from a very young age that, you know what, probably I'm not the only person and she isn't. And you know what, I want to try and make a difference for future generations, or what we're doing, you know, what we're doing on the HIV, whatever stories we bring to the table, we know people are listening and hopefully being empowered and encouraged. And
it helps one person, even just to give them some support, then it's worth it, isn't it?
Exactly. I thought, wow, that she's worth talking about. As I said, we could get her on the show, maybe. I'm just thinking of Stephen as well for your things as well. I mean, she's an incredibly interesting woman, and she's a HIV/AIDS activist, so a one to watch for the future.
Definitely. Yeah. And it's important, isn't it, that we have young people who are carrying the baton and just continuing to do the work that needs to be done.
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely. Should we do a bit of world news?
Shall we?
So I was going to start with, because obviously you can't really ignore what's going on.
Of course not.
Ukraine. So I just wanted to talk about, you know, there's an estimated 260,000 people living with HIV in Ukraine. It's one of the highest rates in the world, actually, people with HIV and AIDS.
I know.
Really?
Yeah, so 120,000 people are women over the age of 15, and there's 2,900 are children, 14 or younger.
Wow.
There's quite a lot of people. And, you know, in the past, before, obviously, before the crisis started, there was, you know, yeah, so things like, so a lot of things are linked to being, injected drug use, social discrimination. Mm-hmm. So that was slightly before the war. So I just wanted to, it's in how people are going to get their medication now, with it. It's just bringing that to the forefront of it, really.
I don't know what you guys are thinking, but my first thought is, what happens if you can't get a hold of your medication?
Yeah.
You've gone in a bunker, perhaps your home's being blown up, you can't get your meds.
It must be so scary. It, you know, things must be scary enough, but to have a condition, you know, that you know needs medication, you know, and you can't get it, it must be, it kind of makes me feel so sad for for it, you know, just for what's going on. It's just, it's a tragedy.
Yeah.
And you're dealing with that day in, day out, but also that on top of that is an extra stress, isn't it? An extra thing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so we send our thoughts, don't we?
Absolutely.
People live with HIV and everybody else, really.
Yes.
What's your story, Sue?
Oh, now, I tell you what, I when I read this bit of news, I don't often get surprised, but I admit it when I do get surprised about statistics and what have you. Now, apparently, Torbay, now that's not in a foreign country, that's in the UK, part of Devon. Apparently, it's in the highest tier outside of London for HIV cases. Because if we think about it, nearly 37,000 people are living with HIV in the capital. And I don't know whether you know, but Brighton is the second highest prevalent city. And then, of course, these stats are really sort of there. Wow, sort of took my breath away slightly. And so basically, Torbay is demanding urgent help from the government as it finds itself pitched into the new front line of Britain's battle to stop the HIV virus. Now, the Bay has echoed the government's call to end new cases of HIV by 2030 and find an estimated 4,660 undiagnosed people living with HIV in England. Now, that figure is just under 5,000 people are estimated living with HIV but have not tested. So that comes from viable medical statistics. So we need to get them people to test, get them on medication, obviously. So that's that figure that they're talking about. So the HIV virus, as we know, attacks the immune system. If not treated, it can lead to AIDS in English. Now, the council has become the government's HIV action plan, and the 20 million being made available by the NHS England for opt-out testing in very high prevalent HIV areas. Now, this is all part of the plan for ending HIV transmission by 2030. It's to, which they're talking about the opt-out testing. So such tests are offered to patients as part of their normal routine screening, but patients can opt out of the HIV test if they want to. Now, basically, within that plan of ending HIV transmission throughout the UK, we want to get rid of that. So it's not an opt-out. Mm, yeah. So I'm feeling unwell today, doctor. Don't know what's wrong with me. I feel a bit run down. And then what they say to you, we'll run some blood. Have you heard that? We'll run some bloods. We'll tick the boxes. We'll run. So when they're sort of running their bloods, they'll be running the HIV bloods as well. So it's normal. It's not, we'll run those bloods. And should we do a HIV test? So this is the problem we have, right?
Yeah.
We'll run them bloods and not mention, you know, that's going to be part of it. That's basically what they're trying to say. So basically, every A&E department in London will benefit from the funding, but Torbay wants to make sure needs are met. So Torbay is the next tier for high HIV programs outside of London, said Torbay councillor leading Steve Darling. What a beautiful name. Steve Ooh. Darling. Imagine being called Darling.
Darling.
Yes, darling. You'd never insult him, would you? You'd never insult him. But and apparently a letter to the health secretary, Sajid Javid. Have I said that right? So
Javid.
Javid. Yeah. I am getting better on to it, guys. He said to meet the 2030 goal and the interim target of 80% reduction in new diagnosis by 2025. The same kind of opt-out testing will be needed in hospital here too. And that's me. Yeah. Sorry, that went on a bit, but yeah.
I was doing that with my hands. So.
Oh, I didn't. I had the laptop. I didn't see it. When I start talking about stats, I get a bit carried.
You get carried away.
I do. Can't help it.
My story is... it's a story from Philadelphia, from the Temple University, and its clinical trials begin for a promising HIV cure developed by Temple scientists. So basically what they are doing is, it's a breakthrough, it's called CRISPR, C-R-I-S-P-R technology, and it uses gene editing to eradicate the genetic material of HIV from infected cells. So participants in the clinical trial will receive the treatment as a single intravenous infusion to test its effectiveness as a one-time treatment for HIV. The trial will be one of the first to attempt to extract HIV-infected DNA from the body. Now, finding a cure for HIV has been difficult in part due to the intense, unique way that the virus interacts with DNA. Shortly after infection, the virus entwines its genetic code into the immune cells and do not actively replicate, meaning that they are not impacted by antiretroviral treatments. This gene editing therapy could be curative because of its ability to remove HIV-infected DNA from parts of cells that serve as HIV reservoirs. Because the virus can hide from popular antiretroviral treatments in these reservoirs, finding a method to overcome this has been difficult. But this CRISPR gene editing technology allows scientists to modify DNA in humans, animals, and plants. The technology is groundbreaking, and its ability to alter plants to make them more tolerant to other potentially damaging climate conditions. And it's also been used after the DNA of a patient with who's had sickle cell disease. The search for a cure for HIV has been decades in the making. And on February 15th, science from the Wells Cornelia Leukemia Program announced that a New York woman had been cured of HIV using stem cell treatment. The woman was diagnosed with HIV in 2013. And used antiretroviral drugs to keep her viral status low. In 2017, she was diagnosed with acute myeloid-like leukemia, also known as AML. Now, that August, the woman received cord blood from a donor whose malnutrition blocks HIV from entering into cells. And the woman received a partially matched stem cells from a relative. After 2 years, the woman showed no sign of HIV on blood tests, and she joins three other people who've been essentially cured of HIV. In January, Moderna initiated a clinical trial for HIV vaccine, a promising development that has been decades in the making, and previous attempts of making an HIV vaccine have proven ineffective because of the unique way that HIV mutates in the body. But the Moderna vaccine and the technology, which is now being looked at by the Temple University, is really hoping that they can find a way of, finding a way around the fact that HIV hides in these cells in our body. So it's hopeful that, maybe this will be you know, a way of finding a cure at long last, you know. There's been so many talks of there being a cure, and you know, and it's you know, and we have to take it with, you know, just
salt.
Yeah, a pinch of salt. Yeah. But you know, now that they've, that I was reading also that they've put $60 million into this fund to work on finding this cure. So maybe this will be the one.
Yeah.
We will see.
And they have to keep trying different ways and then new methods come up, don't they? Different ways, like
exactly. Corona, and sometimes you find them by, you know, they find these things by accident, you know, it's from trying to cure COVID. They maybe find, so who knows?
Mm-hmm. Radio Reverb. Fine. Radio Reverb.
So a little bit, great stories, aren't they? So a little bit communities now, aren't they, from our local area, Brighton? So do you want to go first, Sue?
I don't know if anyone knows, but Brighton, the Town of Thickenshire is hosting the Red Ribbon Walk on the 3rd of, nearly said March, but we've nearly passed that, April. And it's quite exciting because they're putting on three events, the 3rd of April in Brighton, the 10th of April in Glasgow, and the 24th of April in London. So it's £10 to register, and they're asking if you can raise about £150. But I see it as a really great community thing. Apparently in Brighton, if you do the, obviously, if you take part in the Brighton Walk, and I'm doing it, guys, did I tell you? I'm doing the Brighton Walk, and I'm shocking people by saying I'm going to be wearing my Be Kind outfit. That means my Buzzy Bee outfit. And well, you've got to, haven't you? I mean, you've got to. but the great thing about the Brighton, I mean, if anyone is listening and wants to get involved, or you know what, just come and say hello and wave us all on the day, that would be amazing. Apparently that Brighton is putting on a cabaret and drinks afterwards at the Charles Street Tap House. Do you know that? You've heard of that. And apparently the famous Dolly Diamond. Dolly Diamond is going to be the cabaret. So look, the message is, you know, I know we're all in strapped times, but even just to come along, we're starting off on the at 11 o'clock on the 3rd.
On the 11th, I thought you'd say.
Come along, cheer us on. You know, we're walking, I'm dressing up, and if it's just to come and see me in my bee outfit, that's worth getting out of bed for. But yes, but not a thing's going on. That's a bit about what's going on in Brighton. If anyone's interested and wants to get involved or perhaps come on the walk with me or any of the other walks, just contact the Town Thickenshire website. You'll be guided how to get to the page. That's me.
Fabulous. Brilliant. So yes, there's a... There's a shop called in Brighton called Nice and Naughty, which obviously sells nice and naughty things. And they've closed down, and it's an adult product retailer. Mm-hmm. And they were part of the Brighton community. But they've joined forces with the Sussex Beacon to offer all nice and naughty customers a bespoke promotion code that will benefit them, but also generate a donation to the Sussex Beacon on every purchase they've made. So anyone who wants to make an online purchase via the Nice and Naughty website, which is www.niceandnaughty.co.uk, you can use the discount code Sussex Beacon, I think, and they'll receive a 10% discount on any purchase made. You're writing this down, Sue, aren't you?
I can see.
And 5% of the total purchase will be donated to the Sussex Beacon.
Wonderful. Great. Wow. Fabulous.
So I'll be busy. See you tapping away there, Sue. So if you've ever wanted to tell health or social care services what you think but haven't felt able to, research shows that LGBTQ+ people are less likely to share their feedback or experiences. This means that services often don't know how they feel about that, and they can't make improvements. So there's two organisations that have joined forces to run a survey to get the feedback and your ideas to make them giving feedback easier. The survey has been designed by Health Watch Brighton and Hove Switchboard. You can answer the survey even if you don't want to share your feedback about a service. The survey is open until the 4th of April, and you can win one of four £25 gift vouchers if you take part. It takes about 5 minutes to do it. So you can find the survey on Health Watch Brighton and Hove website, which is healthwatchbrightonandhove.co.uk, or search at Health Watch BH, that's capital BH, on Twitter, or at Health Watch Brighton and Hove on Facebook. And if you've got any questions, you can email Alan at hwbh.co.uk. Right. And that's that. Mm. That's another one done and dusted.
Yeah, another one in the can.
Yeah.
Another one in the can. The can count.
Right. Okay.
So, yeah. All right. Well, if you wanted, and actually, we'll say if you want to contribute to the show, or send us an email, it's hiv@gmail.com. And the Twitter is hiv_hour. And there's also, we've got podcasts, haven't we? And yeah, so we're always looking for contributions, aren't we?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Come and share your story, or just come and share some of your information you may have, or create some information and do what Stephen does, Josh does, Tanya and Tony does, you know. Do contact us on the HIV Hour.
Yes. Okay, thank you. Great show. Stay safe, everyone. Take care.
Yes. Yeah. Bye.
Bye.
HIV Hour is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.